Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day. Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And tonight, we have Game 2, Lakers versus OKC. Lakers down 1-0 in the series. And today, we talk some adjustments for Game 2. D, in my rewatch and in chopping and sorting all of the footage, one of my main takeaways was what a discrepancy there was between our front court production and our back court production. And so that's where I want to start today's pod, D's. We focused on Austin, rightfully so. He has the highest expectations of all of our guards offensively. But Marcus, I think, shot 4-for-15. Luke was quiet once again, hasn't really gotten his game off since the first two or three games of that Houston series. And when you're not getting really any production out of your guards, you're not going to be able to beat OKC. Whereas, you know, between LeBron, Rui, and DA, I, you know, was fairly happy with their performances on the offensive end especially. And so talk to me, D, about how do we get more production out of our guards?
I was just looking at the box score again. LeBron and Rui were combined 19-for-30. That means everyone else went 16-for-55 from the field.
Oof.
Ayton was 5-for-12, mm-hmm. almost 50%, but that's actually poor.
It is for a big, yeah. Yeah.
Who shot 70% on the season.
Yeah.
LeBron was great, and he was fantastic around the basket, so I don't want to just limit it to this, but LeBron made 3 of his 6 threes, Rui hit 3 of his 6 threes, and the Lakers went 10-for-30. So they went 6-for-12, and that means everyone else went 4-for-18 from deep. We started our preview for the series talking about the importance of jump shooting, and we zeroed in on Austin and LeBron specifically. LeBron carried his weight in that area. Rui did as well. Austin did not. We talked about that before, but they're not the only three players who are required to hit jump shots on this team. Ayton is going to be a finisher around the paint, obviously. It's why he shot such a high percentage. But I would argue that those little 15-foot middies or 12-foot little jumpers, those are important for the ecosystem of the Lakers offense as well, particularly in pick and roll actions where the pocket pass is going to be available to him. And then when you talk about the guards, which I know that you wanted to lead with them, Marcus and Kennard, they get different types of shots.
Did you like the shots that they got in game one?
I thought Kennard turned some down where he needed to shoot and then shot when he needed to turn some down.
Uh-huh.
So ultimately, I didn't like his shot profile very much at all. Marcus, to me, was like, okay. And some games he's going to make those shots and other games he's right. not. He also hunts fouls a little bit. And so if the whistle's not there, he's going to throw up some stop short jumpers that clank off the glass and backboard at the same time. The spot up threes that Marcus gets, though, I think he's going to need to hit those at a clip that's higher than what he did during the regular season. And I think Kennard is just in the blender himself when he needs to be putting the other team in the blender a little bit more. We talk about the defensive pressure that Austin feels from those guards and OKC's defensive real strength, which is in their backcourt. Kennard's going to feel that even more so.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a shakier handle. Mm-hmm. He's not as good off of the dribble. He's not as crafty. He's mostly a quick decision maker, straight line. I'm getting to a spot and I'm up faking and stepping through, or I'm just getting a shot off. And OKC's much better than that. And this is where I thought, of all the ways that Luka is missed, I think one of the things that showed up in the Houston series, but really showed up in game one, is that OKC doesn't feel the need to overhelp
right.
at all right. on anyone. And it's closing these windows down so quickly. And I thought that was Luke's problem. I thought it was part of Austin's problem. And then Marcus, I feel like he is one of the guys that they're leaving quasi open. And he's just going to have to make the shots that he gets. That's sort of where I'm at with the guards in this.
No, I like that distinction. And if you're not overhelping into the paint, and if you don't have that offensive player that draws that second defender, then those on-ball players have to score, right? And so that is LeBron going 12 of 17, Austin having a much better game, Marcus being able to create a little bit. But with Marcus, I generally agree that he got the best shots, in part because they guarded him the least. With respect to Kennard, a couple of things. I think one is a mentality shift. Again, and I'm in the minority on this. I actually think he's shooting too much, which is strange because he took like four shots. But your comment about like him shooting some shots that he shouldn't take, I think that he still feels the pressure of that first round to sort of put the ball in the hoop at a certain rate and take those not super open type of shots. I think we need him much more from a blender perspective of like, you're our fastest guy who zips around. You can move it around. Let's get us going, you know?
JJ Redick had a comment earlier this season or last season. It might have even been when he was on his podcast. And he talked about how this was when he was with the Clippers, but I think it might have even happened with Philly as well, that Doc Rivers would go to him and basically say, look, this isn't a series where you're going to score. Mm-hmm. What we need from you is this. We need you to occupy defenders. We need you to move. We need you to be active in the same right. ways, but you're not going to get shots in this series because we expect them to defend you in these specific ways and try to take you away.
Right.
And so we don't want to counter that with more aggression from you. What we want you to do then is take that attention with you so that we can manipulate it and do these things instead. And that sort of sounds like what you're talking about with Kennard here.
Very much so. That whole gotta guard Kennard idea is that he requires a defensive resource to be taken away. Like one of the things I saw when Houston won those two games in the last series was, Udoka made this great adjustment putting Amen Thompson on Kennard and has really locked him down. And I'm like, if you want to use Thompson on Luke Kennard, that's a win for the Lakers. In chess, that's like I'm attacking you with my bishop and you have to protect the piece with your queen. Even though I'm not taking the piece, you're devoting more resources than I am on the offensive end to that. So you ultimately win that exchange as a result. And so I do think that just him zipping around, that's, I hadn't heard that quote that you said from Reddick about how, you know, Doc would come to him and say, you're not going to score as much in this because of how they guard you. Luke's the exact same type of way. You do have to guard Kennard, but if you do, you can shut him down. I just think that there's a way for him to leverage that, even if it's not with his own points, that is more of a like drive, kick, swing it type of basketball than we need you to shoot when you have a sliver of daylight.
The drive, kick, swing, I appreciate that he's got that in his game. And I do think he needs to continue to hunt those opportunities. But OKC is going to slide with him. They're going to stick with him. They're not going to help on to him on his drives. The guy who's guarding you is going to be able to eventually recover and contain.
Yes. And they're absolutely right about that, which is why I think you need to use Kennard in context of someone else's gravity as well. And I would love to see more ball screens where he's setting the screen, like more guard setting screens. Same thing is true with Austin, and set it for LeBron and him pop out off of that. That I think that using defense being worried about somebody else to then free him up is the way to get him some more looks. Let's take an early break here. Come back and keep it going.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That's exactly my point as well, Pete, is I think they have to start using Kennard more as a screener. I think they need to use Austin more as a screener as well. There are actions within the Lakers offense. A pet play that they've been running is a cross screen. So LeBron will start on the left wing and Kennard or one of the guards will come and set a cross screen in the paint to get LeBron coming to the right block. And then what ends up happening is Kennard then comes off of a down screen in order to like pop back to the top of the key, right? And so it's basically like an option. My primary read is to LeBron in the post. My secondary read is to Kennard, who is popping.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin is usually the decision maker within that, where Austin's got the ball on the right wing and he's looking for LeBron coming across. Marcus might have been the player who like passed to Austin, right? I'd love to see Austin set some of those screens as well for LeBron coming across the action. I'd also love for them to continue to run their Spain actions where Austin or Kennard are the player who's setting the back screen and then looking to pop. I'm also hoping that in some of the actions that the Lakers are running where they're in horns, and instead of the big coming to set a screen for LeBron, that they run that big to the wing to set the screen. But in the exchange, it's actually like sort of like a, no, I'm going to come up and set like a veer back screen for the big in order for him to circle back and come back, so that there's more action to occupy OKC's defense on the weak side, particularly while LeBron is playing out of the post. To me, Pete, LeBron in the post is the most stable aspect of the Lakers offense against OKC, because they are totally willing to switch on the perimeter. And some of LeBron's good success early in the game came when they switched Kayson Wallace on to him, or they switched AJ Mitchell on to him, and they got Dort off of LeBron in order for one of these other wings to defend him.
I'm not sure that LeBron shot the whole game with Dort on him.
It was very much a we're fine switching this, and we'll see if OKC feels the need to adjust from their side. But until they lose, why would you? But I'd love to see both Luke and Austin set more screens, particularly back screens for bigs, in order to try to shake those guys free so that they can then pop up off of that and flow into a different action, even if it's flow into a DHO after LeBron has the ball. Because I do feel like involving those guys with LeBron's gravity as a passer is probably the type of two and three man action that can make the most hay to get the guards going.
While I completely agree with that, all of this is being discussed through the lens of having all the main guys on the court. And with the starting group, they actually scored fine. They were totally fine in the first 6 minutes of both the first and third quarters. I think they scored 16 points in the first 6 minutes of the first quarter, scored well to start the third as well. And it was really the other parts of the game. We only ended up with 90 points. So there were several parts of the game, D, where all the stuff that we're talking about, it's not possible because one or two of those guys are off the court.
Just to put this in the context, the Lakers starters were minus five in 11 minutes. They didn't defend very well. They had a defensive rating of 142.9.
Jeez.
But their offensive rating was 119. The Lakers' offensive rating for the game was 96.8. So to your point.
Yeah, that was the only time we could score. Yeah.
They scored well above what they did the rest of the game with their starters.
Well, shit, man. How can we defend with the starters then? I know we've been focused on the offensive end, but I do think there's a certain number of points that we're not generating from our defense. That now we did turn over Shea the most of it at any point this season. Lowest point total. I think that it was a bit of a missed opportunity, and that I don't expect or anticipate that that is a certainty that that's going to continue to happen going forward. But what do you think is behind that 142 offensive rating?
I think in sending so many resources to Shea that the Lakers then become vulnerable for the role players to hit shots and for guys to step into open jumpers. And to that point, it's like, look at the role players' production, Pete. Isaiah Hartenstein was 3-for-3. Chet Holmgren was 9-for-17 and hit both of his three-point attempts. Dort was 2-for-5, but his two makes were both threes. You look at Kayson Wallace, he was only 2-for-6. Alex Caruso was only 2-for-5, but Isaiah Joe was 4-for-6. Jared McCain was 4-for-7. And some of those shots from Joe and Kane came at the end of that third quarter and started that fourth quarter push when the starters were actually in the game at that point. I do think that the coverage of the role players and the diverting of resources to Shea and getting that Lakers group into rotation, that's the tricky part of the game for them, because I do like their presence and their physicality and their ability to execute on the front end. But OKC is maybe the best team in the league to play in the middle and in the last third of a possession with moving the ball, understanding their spacing, and getting the ball to the finisher that they want.
Yeah, I think if you were to look at the play-by-play of when that starting group really hemorrhaged on the defensive end, it was in that stretch to end the third and fourth quarter. I think prior to then, it was, I even think they were a plus prior to that, but that was really where the game flipped. Speaking of Chet, that was one of my impressions from game one as well, was we don't really have a lot of great answers for him. There were a lot of plays that I actually didn't hate, because I think he guards this fairly well, but Austin ended up on Chet a decent amount, which I was cracking up at because he is targeted for his physical strength mostly. When teams want to switch Austin onto them, they really want to hit him in the chest. And as good as Chet is, that's not really his game. And I thought Austin twisted his feet up a couple of times, but also is going to give up offensive rebounds and things like that. All of this D is also a function of how much we switch. That is, it kind of is what it is. I know that, you know, Luke and Austin were the low man rotator on a few buckets around the rim, where it's like, yeah, I'd be targeting that if I was OKC as well. And I think it's something that the Lakers should keep in mind as they build their roster going forward. But Chet, between his floor spacing, his size around the rim, his skill and shot making ability, we had difficulty with him, at least in the first half. What are your thoughts on him?
I was just looking at the defensive matchup stuff earlier today, and Austin, when he was credited as being the closest defender, Chet Holmgren was 2 for 6. AJ Mitchell was 1 for 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was good on defense in that game.
We're going to attack Austin Reeves. I actually thought defensively he was probably better than what we discussed at all in the recap for game one, because his game...
Yeah, we just didn't talk about that. We focused on offense for him. But yeah, no, he was fine on
defense. His entire game was overshadowed by how poorly he shot as a shooter. I actually thought some of his passes were very good, and the 6 assists were maybe even an understatement to how well he played as a passer. Some of his turnover stuff was on ball, the sort of challenges that he can have. To your point about Chet, I thought he did most of his damage as a spot-up shooter and as a quasi-transition player and a guy who was able to get baskets off of cuts. When he was asked to create his own one-on-one isolation, even if it was against Austin Reeves and trying to bang down and in the post, he missed those shots. Now, he's more than capable of making those shots too, and I saw him play against Phoenix and get all the way from the three-point line to the basket and score off of nifty spin moves and step throughs and up fakes and all of this other stuff. He's got all of that in his game. But if the Lakers can stand him up effectively and sort of shut down the open threes and his movement in transition, I think that's the key to slowing him down. OKC is playing without their second best offensive player in terms of Jalen Williams, and maybe their second best player.
Mm-hmm. I think he is.
He was awesome last playoffs. Some people would probably say that Chet has surpassed him now, but it's 2A, 2B. But if you can limit Chet, then I think that's an important part of whatever success the Lakers are going to have in this series. Again, this last game, what did he have? 24 points? He led the team in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was 9 for 17 from the field. Where are you at in terms of trying to slow him down? Because the Lakers don't necessarily have a great individual matchup for him.
And nor do I think it's really an individual matchup solution in the first place. Let's go to break here, come back and talk about that.
Hey, parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
To your point, most of the damage that he's doing is not on the ball. There's less that you can do in those type of circumstances. He's great at either spotting up and hitting that three or racking the closeout. He's a big who can pull up from mid-range and do all that. But these are all like mid-play type of scoring events. I do think if you can give them that fool's gold of, yeah, no, go post up Austin with Chet and see how that goes for you. I think that that is one of their best moves. And this is where I'm arriving at a few places from game one is like we don't have the horses. Like we don't have enough guys to dedicate resources towards Shea and get out to their shooters and take away the bigs and Hartenstein and Chet. And so I don't have a lot of great answers on this front with him. Where's your mind at on that?
I just think that you're going to have to concede a certain amount of production to both Chet and Shea. I actually wanted to go away from the like, how do you slow down Chet Holmgren? Not to say that that's where your mind was going, but it's just like, I do think it's important to limit him and that he can't be as efficient. And making both of his threes goes a long way towards 24 points. If he's 0-for-2 instead of 2-for-2, he's got 18 points, right?
This is part of my point, D, is the Lakers with the limited resources relative to OKC, they have to dedicate them toward problems that they can actually solve, that I'm not sure that this is one of them to that like same degree.
This is why I wanted to pivot to what I thought was actually the difference in the game, which was OKC's bench. Jared McCain had 12 points. He was 4-for-7 from the field and 4-for-5 from three. Isaiah Joe had 9 points. He was 4-for-6 from the field and 1-for-3 from three. 21 points and 5-for-8 from behind the arc for those two players. The Lakers bench, Kennard had 7 points. Hayes had 3 points. Laravia had 3 points. Vando had 2 points. And that was it. Mm-hmm. Those two guys outscored the entirety of the Lakers bench just by themselves. And those groups, the pace that they play with and sort of the quickness and the movement shooting idea, it's just a totally different look. And the Lakers were not ready for that sort of shift in the game. And if those guys are this productive over the rest of the series, the Lakers truly don't have a chance.
Right.
Like, because the Lakers starters were actually capable or equal to OKC starters. It was huge discrepancy from the bench groups in which the game was really won and lost.
Two things on that. This is one of the areas where I'm like, we don't have the horses. The only guy that you named there that I would be like, we need a little more out of you offensively is Kennard. Maybe more than 3 points from Jackson would be great too. But none of the guys that you named coming off of our bench, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's going to give us 15. Kennard will occasionally, but that's about it. I think limiting guys like Joe and McCain in terms of how that actually happened actually starts with limiting the Lakers' own mistakes. I'd guess at least half of that production that you laid out from them happened right at the end of the third quarter and the start of the fourth. A lot of those possessions were transition plays where we threw some BS pocket pass that got tipped away, and now they're going the other way. And that was the part of the game, too, where I thought the Lakers started to hang their heads a little bit and be like, yes, all right, this is a little bit over. And if you do that for 2 minutes, that continues to be the most remarkable thing to me about OKC. I don't think I've ever seen a team that just punishes the dumb shit that you do quite as well as they do. And to your point about how that bench look is just such a different style of playing basketball, it reminds me of the 2009 Lakers, where they had the biggest starting group in the league with Powell and Bynum. The next year, they had Artest at the three, Kobe at the two, Fish at the one, just massive all the way across. But then that bench group was like Farmar and Sasha and Lamar, and they were faster, right? Look at the OKC group that's coming off of the bench. They start with Chet and Hartenstein, but then it's Jalen Williams at the five spot, who's stylistically entirely different than those two are. And the whole group can really, really go. So you go from this starting group, Shea's got great size at the one, Dort is a tank. When Jalen Williams, J-Dub, you know, they're big across the board with that starting group. And then your 3 minutes left in the first quarter, and all of a sudden you've got to really put on your track shoes. I love when a roster can kind of get to that point. It speaks to the depth of their team.
I would also argue, too, that players like Joe and McCain have been challenges for the Lakers defense all season.
Like, great point.
McCain, like a water bug, sort of shifty movement shooter. And Joe isn't necessarily the off the dribble player like that, but he can definitely like move around, come off of screens, and is super effective at using the gravity of his shot to then sidestep into a jumper ball fake and still hit shots. I'm wondering, Pete, Vando's doubtful.
Which is insane that he's not out entirely.
I was saying the notion that they put his finger back together and sewed it up. I was just like, is it made out of Legos? Like, I don't understand. They put it back together. That sounds so rough for our guy Vando, man. And sewed it up and he's doubtful and considered day to day. This is crazy. I don't expect him to play. The Lakers, I don't think, can shorten their rotation from 9 to 8.
Yeah.
At this point in the series, who plays? Do you think someone plays for him?
I don't think so. I think that they shorten the rotation.
Interesting.
Every option that I go to help, because I didn't like the Vando minutes either, not because of anything he did terribly wrong, but the lineups where there's like no LeBron, Jackson, and Austin on the floor, they've got to be able to run pick and roll to be able to generate effective offense. But against a team like OKC, they are just going to help off of Vando, and they close out fast enough to the three-point line. And the playoffs, just shooting threes in the playoffs is different. Even if they don't get out to Vando, he's not in a rhythm. I think he's only made 1 3 over the course of these playoffs. But the alternatives are like, Jake isn't even looking to shoot when he gets the ball out on the perimeter and is often just kind of has that forward charge mentality. I think he's probably the likeliest option, but I didn't think Jake played particularly well, especially on offense. Basically, everybody that I think we could go to has a bright red flag.
Yeah.
That said, though, D, right at the beginning of the series, I'm like, try stuff. Throw the kitchen sink. If they want to run one of the other guys, it's just, I just don't know who that would be. Where's your head at on that?
I would play Bronny.
Okay.
I would have him guard one of the guards. This is one of the weaker parts of the Lakers defense in general. He's the closest thing the Lakers have to a guy who is capable defending that size of player. What he does best, it's not. I actually think that Bronny defends up better than he defends down in terms of like smaller, quicker players. That said, he is a good athlete. He's strong. He does compete defensively. I think that he's a pretty good connecting player offensively. In the Houston series, as he played more and more, he showed confidence as a shooter, much more confidence as a shooter than Jake or Vando. And he is a downhill transition player as well. Like, he does things that can help in this environment. Do I expect him to play well against the reigning champs and be some difference maker? No, I don't. But it's too early, Pete, to say we're going to play 8 guys in game 2 and say, like, this is what we're going to do. And while I appreciate the idea of Vando's a forward and maybe going bigger and playing Kleba and doing something like that, I'm much more inclined at this point to try a smaller player.
Yeah.
It's either him or Adu. And I would much rather play Bronny, who has some ball handling. You're not going to have him bring the ball up against Kayson Wallace.
That's what I worry about against OKC.
No. Yeah. I think that he's got to play with like Austin or Smart and Austin, that Austin and whoever the other guard is have to like have the ball handling responsibilities, and that you can't leave him out there on an island to go against Kayson Wallace the way that happened in that like final game of the regular, that last matchup where no one played. But if you're talking about, okay, well, we need a defensive option against some of these bench groups, and this is where Vando would play, it's just like, try Bronny for a 4-minute shift in the first half in this part of the game and tell him, look, man, your responsibility is to go out there and defend Jared McCain. Go out there and defend Isaiah Joe. Stay attached, track, don't get lost, lock in.
Yeah.
This is what your job is tonight. Look at the tape, see what they're doing. We'll talk you through it, and this is the job. Like, I don't know. That's just where my head is right now.
No, I can get behind Bronny for sure. I think the Lakers need to be the fastest version of themselves, which is part of the reason why I think Kleba is less of an option if you want to go deeper into the bench. I think he struggles a bit with those faster type of teams. But yeah, I'm good with that. I actually think you need to pair him with his dad more than anybody. I don't trust the ball handling of the other guys quite the same way, not from a bring the ball up court standpoint, but to really get into your offense. But I do think that those second quarter shifts where Bronny starts that and you're looking to add some defensive speed on the perimeter, I'm good with that. I agree he should be the next guy up.
That's where Vando would play anyway, Pete.
That's right.
Is with LeBron. Any closing thoughts in terms of adjustments from the Lakers? Do you expect them to continue the sort of defensive resources at Shea and trying to limit him as like the main idea of their defensive game plan?
I do, and I do think that that's the right move to make. I expect OKC to be a little less rusty and a little more, I think they were prepared for that, but I think it's different to run it in practice versus being ready for it in a game. Also, several of Shea's turnovers were like, I'm trying to grift some bullcrap foul and the Lakers didn't bite on it and he turned the ball over, which is just, that's how it should be.
Yes. The refs also didn't give him some of those calls, which is something I hope to see continue. The thing I want to end with, because I agree with all of that stuff with the defensive intent towards SGA. The last thing that I will point out is I'm going to go back to the beginning, which is Austin Reeves. Austin's the second most important player next to LeBron, and in some ways, maybe even the most important player, because LeBron, I think, has some natural advantages within this series that he can lean into, and I expect LeBron to have a floor level of production and effectiveness. I do think that part of what we saw from Austin was like, oh, are there adjustments? Could they use him as a screener? Can they put him in more DHO situations rather than straight ball screen situations? Yes. I also think, though, that his level of shot making just needs to go up. Some of the pull-ups, like I do think there's a decision-making aspect to this, which you talked a lot about last pod, but the pull-ups in the midi, the sort of slowing down after he gains advantage and not rushing. I also think that like screen and rescreen, declining screens, those are things that he's really good at and that he needs to really lean into that aspect of his offensive effectiveness. But he also just needs to see the ball go through the hoop a couple of times. And if that's getting to the foul line a little bit more, if that's seeking out contact a little bit more, the Lakers need it.
And I do think that going out of their way to get him an easy shot or a trip to the free throw line, just to get something going for him, because he is somebody that once he does hit a couple of shots, the exact same shots that he's getting that are tough and semi-contested, he can start hitting those. All right, we will be back tomorrow to discuss. Come join me on Offside tonight for game two. But until tomorrow, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.